Joe.
Accession number 10421,
no,
reel
no,
19.
No.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, Reel 19. You say you had Italian troops with you, Mr. Thornton. How long had were they with you? How had they been with you?
Well, I don't know that. Actually, that's the first time I'd seen these chaps with mules, because apparently we hadn't needed them on the other sectors. So this being a more hilly part of the country, they must have said, right, well, this is the opportunity to use these mules instead of getting... of course, you couldn't use transport. That you would normally use, your transport would come up with your stuff as far as it could. With this particular terrain, they couldn't, so the mules came in very handy. And that's the reason, probably, that the first time I'd come across them.
The Germans were just beyond you.
That's right. They were just beyond. Well, we were facing each other. It was more or less like a 14 war effort, entrenched, watching each other, and trying to capture any little hill. That was the idea of now, is to get a vantage point, and see if you could. Get rid of them from their positions.
You're still with support company?
Yes, yes. Now,
about what time, just before going, about what time are we talking about now?
We're talking about 25th of January, actually, when
1944.
1944, when we went over to, over the Grigliano. Now, our troops now were getting weary, of course. They'd been in the line, actually, on and off for 6 weeks. And they were getting no further forward. So the powers to be decided that there was going to be a landing to capture this town from, called, I think it was Suja. And they were going to use commandos. I don't know whether they were Marine commandos or our own commandos, but anyhow, they were going to make a landing and attack from the sea to get this place. Well, they did attack, and I was up the hill at the time, and we were bringing them down. The commandos had about 300 casualties doing this attack and didn't get it. And our chaps were saying, well, if we couldn't get it, they wouldn't get it coming that way. And it's got a terrible bashing.
What do you think was the cause of this? Was it difficult to land from the
sea? Oh, beg pardon?
Was it difficult to get in?
Well, it was. They still had to go up the mountain. Still had to go up the hill once they landed. I don't know really whether they thought they could get round an attack from behind or what. But anyhow, it didn't work out. And so they got slaughtered. I mean, I was there, seeing the stretchers coming down, being carried down from the hillside, because I went right up the hill to check on stores, and it was really bad, and things really were getting bad for the battalion. It was so bad, really, I think now, that the colonel, as I said once before, had said his men had been in the line too long, and I think he was instrumental in the battalion being relieved, because we thought it was the battalion that had been relieved. Anyhow, it was the 13th of February, And we were withdrawn. The whole battalion withdrawn. And we went to a place called La Vaglia. It was something happened, and everybody started to think. The B echelon moved and joined the battalion, which was never done. And we, S Company itself, went to a little place near hand called Roccamanfina. And then rumours start to circulate around the battalion. People were saying they're going home. The battalion's going home. And, of course, that wasn't true. But stores were... G-98 stores, which were the heavy stuff and what have you, were being handed in. And then again, people were saying, oh, what is happening? And so, this was the 3rd of February when this started. And then we were told they'd be out of the line for a longish period. Well, spirits went up. And on the 20th of February, lo and behold, all our vehicles left, and we got on trucks, and we were taken to an assembly point near Naples.
Can I ask you, how was the tiredness and exhaustion reflected at the time? Can you recall how the state of the battalion, or the state of your company?
They were sick. They were fed up. I mean, normally, in a war, you are fed up. But you could see the difference in the men. They were tired. They'd been up for 3 weeks in these hills, for the start, besides the other little parts that they'd done before that. So they hadn't really had a rest. None of us had a real rest. What would you call a rest? A couple of days, which you knew straight away you're going back in the line. So it wasn't a rest. Your mind didn't register as a rest at all.
And what was the weather like at this time up in the mountains?
Oh, it was cold and miserable. Not raining all the time, of course, but it's still cold and miserable. The men were just weary. So, what would you say? Battle fatigue and war weary.
Did it show itself in any outward signs, you know, in discipline or morale?
No, just fed up. People being fed up. They didn't... morale, yes, but there was no absence of anything like that. But they were fed up. They'd had enough. They'd been there too long. I mean, they'd been fighting since Salerno, September.
What kind of casualties had you? Any idea of the battalion as a whole? And your own company? I know you had some in the previous action, but what kind of casualties were you having?
Well, we had a lot in North Africa, from the start. I'll be able to tell you later on about casualties, I think. But at the present, I can't think of them. Anyhow, we got into a camp near Naples, and on the 20th. And on the 21st, we embarked on the ship called the Sobieski. This was a Polish vessel. I think it had been a passenger ship. But it was taken over by the Royal Navy, and I suppose the Polish seamen were still working on it in various degrees. But it was taken over by the Navy. And we set sail. Still in the dark, slightly. I had a bunk, a cabin. I was put in the Chief Petty Officer's place where they had their... particular cabins, and of course I got to know them. And this we were going to probably be on the sea for 6 days, 6 or 7 days. And fortunately, these chaps, petty officers, when they get their rum ration, an ordinary seaman, he gets his rum ration, he puts it in his bin, he's got to drink it straight away. Petty officers are different, he can save his up. He'll have a nice drink when he feels like it. Well, they had their rum ration. And of course, we helped them. Invited, of course. Off we went to sea. Now, it started to get warmer and warmer and warmer. Of course, all the spirits rose. The chaps were thinking, oh, great, this. Not
were there
where
any other troops on board?
No, just the battalion. Just the battalion.
And what was life like on board?
Oh, it was great. It was great. Nothing to do. Nothing to do. I mean, there's nothing you could do. But on 27th of February, we arrived at Portside. And the contrast to the weather. Sun, warm, even at that time, warm, lovely weather, and spirits very high. We went to a desert camp called Quisasin, or Kassasin, whichever you like to call it, start with a Q, which was on sort of the other end of the canal. And we weren't received very well by the people there. The of course, you know what the lads call them, base wallers, and there was quite a few scuffles went on. The lads were let loose. There was a bar there, there was beer there, and so as I say, quite even in the sergeant's mess, there was quite a few arguments and scuffles, not amongst them, but with these chaps who thought we shouldn't be there. Sort of business. That's the attitude that our chaps took. But we weren't there very long. But we were told that we have now come for a rest and to train, to retrain for to return to Italy to fight again. So that didn't matter at the time. Sun out, everything. So we moved. The first thing that happened, off we went, everybody. 4 days leave in Cairo. First day, or I should say, 2 hours after we got there, two sergeant majors were under close arrest. No, I wasn't one of them, by the way. But what they didn't know, but what happened, they went into a red light district, out of bounds. Didn't know the area, hadn't been to Cairo before. And went in an out of bounds area, and the police picked them up and put them in. Well, after some phone calls, the adjutant, of course, had released them. Yeah. And, of course, they were released and carried on with the leave. There was a big hotel called the Hotel de Roses, and it was a warrant officers and sergeants hotel, really. And we made our way to this big hotel, and in it was a heap of American. Well, they were pleased to see us. We got on well then. The beer was on, but what happened was that it was, when it's gone, it's gone. You couldn't drink it all night. So these Americans started, and we were square tables, and the tablecloths on, everything, with little squares. And these Americans got, and they filled every square. They went to the bar, and they filled every square up on the table with beer, half-pint beers. So as much as you wanted, when it was finished, it was finished. And we had a terrific night with dancing. No women there, but we were dancing. These couple of youngs, about 6'4", had hold of me, and they'd dancing around, holding my legs off the floor. And then we went away after that to our billet, that was reserved for us. Not quite sober, you believe me. This went on for 4 days. The strange thing that happened in Cairo, while you had been in Italy for so long, you lost completely your road sense. you'd been used to no traffic on the roads or traffic coming one way. And when you got into the city of Cairo, the traffic was going up and down. You were standing on the roadside trying to get across, petrified. I remember myself, I would cross the road easy, dodging the traffic, but that time you couldn't. You seemed to have lost. You completely lost your road sense. It's one of those things that happens, I suppose, when you go to a place where nothing happens in that respect.
How did you find the Egyptians?
Same as Egyptians. They would crowd round, they wanted to buy, of course. And you get this Egyptian and he's flowing, and he'd take you into a coffee shop that sold silver. Not a coffee shop, a shop that sold silver. And they'd bring out a little cup of coffee, free, of course. And it was black, and it was like treacle. It was horrible. And because he then tagged onto you. He wanted to show you everything. But all he was after was money. He decided he was going to be your guide. You didn't ask him. He decided he would be your guide. He did take us a few places. We didn't buy many things. I think I bought a couple of silk handkerchiefs for my wife. I think I've still got them, as a matter of fact, little fancy things in one shop. And I bought a bit of silver, not a great deal. But they were funny people. The little shoe blacks, the boys, wanted to clean your boots. And if you refused, they got their brush and went like that, and that would be all over your boots, and you had to get them cleaned. Actually, we should have kicked you behind and got them out of it, but there was a great blob of black stuff on your shoes. So he said, go and get them cleaned. And they were all after a little bit of cash. The new soldiers, they knew we had money, and they were played on it. But that went down very well. Four days rest and leave. Well, it wasn't really rest. It was a change, a great change. So we then that leave ended, and we went back to our camp in Qusassin. The next little trip out was Cairo again, but not quite into Cairo. It was called Mina Camp, and a truck full of one of the sons went to visit the 1st Battalion. The 1st Battalion were now getting ready to go to the same place as we went to, Italy, actually. And they were, they'd been on the island, of course, and a lot of them got captured. The paratroops, German paratroops had dropped on course, and of course a lot were caught. And they were then regrouping, ready, because we met them in Italy later on. And I think thereafter we went to a place called Refa Yona. It was near Tel Aviv, I think.
Just before you move on to there, what training had you done at Qusassin?
None yet.
But no. Was it a big camp?
Yes. It was a tented camp, of course. But I must say one thing about it, that we got to know each other. The science mess was together in a tent. We had knives and forks. We had a table. We had tablecloths. We had grapefruit for breakfast every morning. And we had food laid out for us. The main thing, we got to know our sergeants, because you never saw them. Sergeants of other companies. This is the first time they've been together for months and months. It was something to be able to say, you probably meet a sergeant who didn't know was in the battalion. One of your chaps you joined up with or was in England with before. It was a great thing.
You didn't have any duties at all of any kind?
Oh, there was your normal pickets and guards and what have you, but there was no training as yet.
Did you have any trouble with Egyptians breaking in and stealing and what have you?
No, not a lot, not to remember. But while we were there, at this little place near Tel Aviv, disturbances broke out in Tel Aviv. And we were sent to Tel Aviv to help the civil police. We just carried out patrols and things like that. A few incidents of these activists causing trouble. But
were these Jews?
I'm not sure really whether what they were, but. All I know at that time, there were disturbances, and we didn't take any notice. Or we knew we had to go there and stop any carry on that was going on. We weren't there very long, doing these few patrols. I don't think I remember any particular nasty position we were in at all. I think once they saw the army moving in, it was. It made them think twice, as it does normally. If the police can't handle it, and they say a lot of troops come in, it helps to quiet them down.
Well, you're under strict discipline at this time. You weren't mixing with the
population. No. I don't think we had a night out there at all. I can't remember having a spell out. I think what we did was go back to camp again and then go out the next day, because, as I say, it was near Tel Aviv, so there was no point in going there and staying there. If we were wanted, of course, they would get in touch and we'd be rushed out into the
Do you recall the journey from Krasasin to Tel Aviv? How did you get there?
Transport. When we got to Egypt, we took over all transport, battalion transport that was lying there. This was all transport painted sand coloured, the desert transport. That is the reason we didn't take our own, because we couldn't take it. It would have been too much of a trouble to take transport and half your battalion stuff. So the transport was there waiting for us to take over when we got there, and all your other stuff. All your other stores.
So you went overland?
Oh, yes.
And how long did it take you?
To where?
From the camp, the army camp in the desert to Tel Aviv.
Oh, just a few hours. It was only not very far, same as Cairo. It was done in one day. It's just a bus ride. Mm. Well, we finished with that in Tel Aviv. And we moved from this camp at Nifar Yona, and we went to a place called Er Rama, which was another camp in the desert. There we start to train again.
What date is this?
Let me see. March, middle of March. And we started platoon and company training. And then later on, it was training, brigade training with tanks, because they wanted more experience with working with tanks. There wasn't really a lot done. To me, they'd done it all before. It was just to keep us in, keep our hand in at our training, to do it. And of course, it was better. It was nice weather, and you could enjoy it. It was platoon and company levels mostly. While I was at this place, war correspondence there, reporters, you might call them, but I think they would be called war correspondents, and they came to interview people, and of course the company commander says, go and talk to the Sergeant Major. And of course he had a word with me. He asked me where I lived and what I did, and was I married and had any family, and I just answered him. And of course there's a little bit of paper here dated the 16th of May 1944, which says there, well earned rest, resting after the most spell of the most fierce fighting of the Italian campaign. Company Sergeant Major L. Thornton, whose wife and small boy live at 10 Dobson's Buildings, Lower Spennymoor, said it is the first really quiet spell we've had since I joined the battalion at Tiano last October. He said we have been well in the thick of it practically the whole time. His regiment, after Salerno, had been on the Volturno and Garigliano doing magnificent work. CSM Thornton is a regular soldier, toughened and seasoned by the rigours of active service, but he still reflects pleasantly on his days as a grocer at Haverton Hill. We just want to get it finished and get home to the wife and family and Civvy Street. That's what he said. It's not what I said. That was my first idea of what reporters can put in a paper when you to elaborate on what they said. So then I said, now look, you've talked to me, now go and talk to one of my men. I said, Brown? My company clerk. One of my company clerks said, have a chat with this fella. So I said, he's a private soldier, see what he has to say. So he had a word with Brown. And of course, Brown was a joiner and a carpenter in civil life, called up in the army. And a little bit, and it was in the paper about him, he told me about it. He said, it's in the paper, it's got, he laid down his saw for the Tommy gun. Something like that, you see. So, it is funny, really, when you think about it. Now, we still had a lot of things to come. We had the padre come round. Now, lads, we're going to have some run-outs. So he did this every day, and I went with him, of course. And so I visited Nazareth, Bethlehem, Garden of Gethsemane, Jerusalem, the Wailing Wall, Baalbek, and the Golden Gate. The Wailing Wall, they were there. Was it the Jews that were doing the wailing? Jews were there, giving a watch on the wall while we were there watching. Baalbek was a marvellous place. It was ruins, but the marble that was built changed colours as the sun went in different. It changed from black to red. It was absolutely fascinating to watch it.